Alright, let's do that again.
No. Tell me a story.
Well, now?
Don't you know any stories?
Oh, certainly. I know hundreds of stories.
Tell me one, please.
All right, now let me think. All right, now this happened many, many years ago.
That's not the way to begin. Stories start once upon a time.
Oh, yes, that's true. Well, once upon a time, there was a little boy, and he lived in a little town.
What was his name?
His name was David. He was a shepherd, and the town where he lived was called Bethlehem.
Oh, I know Bethlehem. That's where the star was.
That's right. Only David lived long before the star. Well, one night, David was out in the hills tending his sheep. He was playing the harp and singing.
What was he singing? Jingle bells?
No, jingle bells hadn't been written then. David was singing songs that he wrote himself. Well, suddenly an angel came down and spoke to David.
How did David know it was an angel?
He didn't know. And you know, that's the way it always is. Angels come down and put ideas into people's heads, and then people feel very proud of themselves because they think it was all their own idea. Well, this angel said to David, "One of your lambs has strayed." So David put aside his harp and went out in the darkness to find the lamb. Of course, the angel guided him. And when David found the lamb, he saw a great, big, ferocious lion.
Oh!
Mm. So David said to the lion, "You get away from that lamb." And the lion said, "You get away from me or I'll eat you too."
Did David run away?
No. You know why? Because the angel put another idea into his head. So David took out his sling and he hurled a stone and hit the lion right between the eyes.
I bet that lion was surprised.
Yeah. And so was David, because he didn't know an angel had helped him. Well, he picked up the lamb and took it back to the fold. And then he felt so happy that he made up another song. It started out, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul." You can tell the rest of this, Henry.
Some other time.
Hello, Daddy.
Miss Cassaway, will you get Mrs. Hamilton on the telephone, please? Miss Cassaway, Mrs. Hamilton on the phone, please.
Yes, Bishop.
Hello, and welcome to Book vs. Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
It is December 1st as we record this.
Mm-hmm.
We made it.
One more year in the books, kids.
Oh, how was your Thanksgiving?
Very nice. Very relaxing. How about you?
Yeah, mine too. Mine too. I think I mentioned last week that I literally like phoned it in. I pre-ordered the turkey and I pre-ordered the pies. A genius move.
Oh, let me tell you.
Highly recommend.
Yes, same here.
I may never go back to roasting my own turkey. All I had to do was heat it up. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. But yeah, now it's December.
Yeah.
It's December 1st. We want to welcome all the people who joined us over Disney November. That was really fun. I think something we might want to keep up in the future. Again, if you're brand new, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a podcast where we read books that are adapted into movies. We discuss. We're not experts necessarily on either, but this is our just fun little book club of the air. If you have never been with us during December, we do holiday books and movies, and we've been doing this for 7 years, so we were really reaching for ideas. Fortunately, we have wonderful listeners on social media and in our Facebook group in particular. And if you would like to join that group or interact with myself or Margot D or other listeners of this podcast, there are several places where you can do that.
We do have a basic Facebook page. Be sure to like it. The Facebook group is where we're more interactive with each other, with the listeners, when people coming in with ideas. But basically, with the ideas, the product has to be the book, movie, song, play, magazine article, whatever it is that they're adapting. It needs to be something pretty easy for us to get. It should be on Kindle or on the Libby app. You can join our Facebook group. You can type in at Facebook, Book vs. Movie Podcast Group. And on Twitter and Instagram, you type out Book versus a Movie. Please reach out to us there as well. We also have an old-fashioned email, bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And I should also say the movie needs to be something that's on a streaming platform. YouTube is okay. Just make sure that it's there. you know, if it's not like if it's just one scene and then it turns out there's nothing else, that's not helpful.
Yeah, it has to be the whole movie.
Yes.
But yes, we have had, was it Harper Valley PTA that was entirely on
YouTube? Yeah. With the commercials. Yeah, that was great. And Elvis and Me. That was a fun one.
Oh, and Elvis and Me. Yeah, so it happens. Sometimes we do a YouTube one. But yeah, we really want to make sure that this is very accessible, not only for our listeners, but for ourselves. If you are a very big fan of book versus movie and you would like to keep us in books and movies and keep things running around here, you can also support us on Patreon. And we were just saying before we got on the air that people have been, I mean, it's the holiday season. People are being so generous in joining our Patreon lately.
Yes, thank you so much. You go to Patreon and you type in Book vs. Movie Podcast. I'd like to thank Jenny who just joined. We're putting all of our episodes from 2019 and before that up on the page. So the last couple of years are really fantastic episodes. The Godfather's up there, Practical Magic.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I just love that episode. That's up there. So there's a bunch of really good ones up there. Some of the old holiday ones that we've covered a few times, they're on there, that page, and they're for free. So you could just, there's stuff there for free. Just go to Patreon. And thank you so much, Jenny, once again, for joining the Patreon page. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jenny. It is, it makes a big difference, and it just means a lot to us.
Yeah.
And very, very exciting today. This episode is brought to you by Kensington's newest title from Teresa Beharry, They Lived Happily Ever After.
Yes, we are so excited to be a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. They talk about romance with all their show, with their different podcasts, but also pop culture. This is on the romance side. And They Lived Happily Ever After is by Therese Beharry. She writes all kinds of rom-com, and this is especially for women of color. This is a big deal. This is a romance that takes place in South Africa, in Cape Town. And it's really interesting. It's about an author named Gaia Anders, and she writes rom-com novels. And what she does is she dreams about the plot, and then what happens in the in her dreams, she puts down to paper, and it always pretty much turns out the way she wants it to be. And so, and she kind of grew up in this system where she was a foster child and has some trauma, and she falls in love with her BFF's younger brother. And then he gives her this kiss and it starts interrupting her dreams. So she had this perfect pattern of writing books, and then she kisses this guy, and all of a sudden it's like, bam, where are we going to go with this? And so they have this romance. It's really sweet. She has big, big fans. And I've been reading about her in Goodreads, and she's just fantastic. So we want to thank them very much. This is Kensington Books. It's available, And They Lived Happily Ever After, Therese Beharry. And you could find her at therese.beharry.com. And it's available on Kindle and in paperback. And we want to thank them very much for supporting the show.
That's right. You can find They Lived Happily Ever After by Therese Beharry wherever books are sold. Find out more at kensingtonbooks.com.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
This was today's book and movie. There's two movies, and we're going to talk about the original one. We're just going to say it right off the bat. We'll briefly touch on the Whitney version, which is better than I remembered.
Same.
I took a little look at it. But today we're going to be talking about The Bishop's Wife, which we were just saying before we got in the air, is a book that is nearly 100 years old.
Our author is Robert Nathan. This was published in 1928. And every once in a while, I have to kind of look at the plot and I'm like, it's about a preacher, a pastor who is Episcopalian. He's married and he's obsessed with getting this church cathedral built and getting money for that. And I guess they live in New York. I'm not quite sure where they live, but he's married. Did you think?
Yeah, so? I wasn't completely clear on that either, but it does sound New York-y.
I should say that Robert Nathan, our author, was born in New York City and spent most of his time there. He's written dozens of books. The biggest things he's noted for are The Bishop's Wife and then a story called Portrait of Jenny. I'm not really familiar with that one. That was turned into a movie. He was married 7 times, Margot. 5 times he was divorced. 6 wife passed away. His 7th wife was Anna Lee, who played Mrs. Quartermain on General Hospital, Quartermain, the matriarch.
Lila Quartermain.
I loved her.
So he's an optimist.
He's an optimist. And what's interesting is that he's from a Sephardic Jewish family. They were from the U.S. and Switzerland. They came to the U.S. and he went to Harvard. It's interesting. He's related to two women. His mother's sister, two sisters, were also last named Nathan. One was Maud Nathan, one was Annie Nathan Meyer. And they were on two different sides of the suffragettes movement. And you could look them both up on that. So he's got very bossy women in his life and his background. And so he wrote a story about a not very bossy wife. And it's sort of
She sure isn't.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and you know, a couple of things that I thought were really interesting about the book, just right off the bat, is that you have, again, you have to kind of bear in mind the entire time that it's the mid 1920s when he's writing this. It's not the Depression yet. We're like right on the precipice of the stock market crash. But, you know, already there's some, just like today, already there's some inequities, just like how the pandemic has really highlighted things that were already not working in our various systems. In a similar way, there were already these rumblings, things that weren't quite working in American society in the mid-1920s, that when the stock market crashes, everything really unravels really fast. So we're at this time, and you're reading it again as in a post-depression, you know, mindset, where you're like, why are you building a cathedral? Like, of all the stupid things to blow your money on in 1927, a cathedral? Are you kidding me? But that is what this bishop, he is single-minded. This is his, like, life's mission is to build this cathedral. And he has a wife, Julia, mm-hmm. who we meet right away. And he has a daughter named Juliet in the book. Her name, the daughter's name is Juliet. And Julia, right off the bat, we get, you know, kind of her little window into her. We immediately learn he's completely obsessed with his work, and she never really loved him. Sounds like
no.
And she's extremely unfulfilled in her marriage, which is supposed to be, again, we're talking about 1927. Like, that should be her whole mission in life, is to be a happy wife, right? So she's not.
She's married to a man who has big pie in the sky dreams for, like you said, for something that really shouldn't be that important. You should be putting that money away or doing something else. You're going to be needing it to take care of people, you know, coming over, really, because that's all coming around the corner. She's married to him. They love each other. But she says quite often in this story, she's lonely, that they don't have sex very often. They don't talk very often. They're not often not together for meals.
He doesn't spend time with her. No. He never asks her anything about herself.
No.
Ever.
Ever. And,
ever.
And it takes them years. You know, they have their first kid. And some people, it does take a while. But for them, it is because they're not really connecting, let's just say. And he's obsessed with getting money. And the only way to get money is to get it from big rollers, big people, you know, have big pockets. So he meets up with people. And in the story, there's a woman, there's, like, you know, old dowagers that he's going to. There's also a professor that he's meeting up with. And then there's a Jewish man, Cohen. And there's a big discussion about, are Jewish people, are they kind? Are they good? Do they love their families? Are they naturally giving? It's sort of this, like, yeah, people think we own all the banks and all the stuff, but are we religious? Are we worthy members of the community? Why should we give money for this cathedral versus another program that could help the whole community?
Again, another very valid point.
Yeah.
I appreciated that you have Mr. Cohen as the the voice of reason, really, is saying, are you sure this is the best idea right now?
Yeah.
And you're asking me, because why?
Because he has a lot of money. And he's like, yeah, I get that. But what are we doing with this money? And he's talking about his family came from trauma for what they dealt with in Europe. And they came to America and they're very successful. But some people resent them for their success. Everything old is new again. Let's just say that. But he dreams and dreams and dreams of getting money for this cathedral. And an angel shows up. And the angel's name is Michael, I believe, in the book.
Yes, it's in the book. It is Michael.
And Michael's handsome.
We should just say,
yeah.
First of all, we spoil everything.
Yeah, that's
good. So if you've never read this book or seen this movie, and you don't want to know how it ends, maybe don't listen to this just yet. But there are some significant differences in the story between the book and the movie. One is just what we just described, which is that it is a loveless marriage. This is right from the outset, it is defined as a loveless marriage. And the second, okay, we have the angel whose name is not Dudley, as it is in the movie. It is Michael. And Michael is very charming and everybody loves him. Just like in the movie, he's very upfront with the bishop, like, hey, here I am. I'm an angel.
Yeah.
And the bishop in the book is very like, oh, okay, great. Just what I wanted. Help me build this cathedral.
Yeah. This comes out, by the way, the movie, this is 1928, this comes out. The movie comes out in 1947, and it's just at the same year that It's a Wonderful Life comes out. And there's a couple of the same actors. So there's two.
There sure are.
Yeah, which is alarming at first. It's, and they both, really, George? Like, oh no. Okay,
yeah, no. Yeah.
But it's about an angel that that goes into somebody's life to help fix their problems. And this guy's problems is a lot less interesting than George Bailey's. Like, that's a whole, and we did cover that before. I think it's on our Patreon page.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's, so the bishop, so this, excuse me, this angel comes along and he's sort of shadowing him around and he's connecting with the wife, Julia, in a big, big way. Like, they fall in love.
Yes.
And he's struggling.
In the book, Julia falls in love with the angel and the angel falls in love with Julia. Like, he, it's very clearly stated. It's not like, and I'm sorry, did they sleep together or not?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think God
it
prevents.
It gets real steamy there for a second.
It's a passionate clinch in one moment. Like, he could feel the hair you know, on his face, and it's setting his face on fire, and he's talking to God, like, and God saying, no, you can't have mortal love. You can only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? You're
what
an
are you
angel.
Doing? That's not what you're here
he's like,
for.
But
we have a spark. Yeah. We love each other. He loves the daughter. He makes friends in the neighborhood. Everyone likes him. He's a fun guy. He's trying to figure out what he's supposed to do. He's so in love with her that he realizes, okay, I'm going to help this guy out and then I have to go. And he tells her, you know, I can't be with you. Gosh, I wish I could. You know, but so she in the story becomes pregnant, and that baby is meant to be the love and the passion that she has for
to
Michael.
Fill the hole in her heart.
Exactly.
Yes. It's
a bummer.
Super bummer. Like, Julia is, first of all, she has no life. She mm-hmm. has no interests. She has no curiosity about the world around her. Anyway, she just has like no love, and she the one place where she's supposed to get it, she's not getting it. And so she's very devoted to her daughter, Juliet. But at a certain point in the book, she's like, well, Juliet's going to grow up. Then what am I going to do?
She's
I know. I'll have another kid.
Yes. And she's spacing it out that far apart.
Because
I know people have
done
this.
That's a great
too.
Solution.
I've known people who have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not a.
No.
It's got its problems. It's not a perfect plan.
No, it is not. But yeah, that's sort of how it ends. You know, Michael, the angel, spends a good part of the book trying to help Henry, the bishop, see the error of his ways and be like, you know, your wife, you got this great wife. What are you doing? Like, why mm-hmm. are you chasing this money? And he just really just never gets through to Henry. Really. He helps him with the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the end he gets the funding, right? And he's able to build the cathedral, rah, rah. But no, they never resolve. You know, Julia is in love with the angel and the angel is in love with Julia. And the angel really thinks is trying to figure out a way to make that work
with God, and God's kind of like, no, you have to.
No, sorry,
you're an angel. Sorry, this doesn't happen. I should say, by the way, I listened to it on the Libby app, and it's you could do books and you had audiobooks, so it was like a 3-hour audiobook.
It's super easy to find.
Oh, it's very easy to find, and it's like 99 cents on Kindle or something like that.
Oh yeah, and it's well written.
Yes.
You know, the writing is very good. And there are, as we've touched on, there are insights and concepts that I think are really interesting. But it's such a bummer. Like, her, that's her life. Mm-hmm. Then what is she going to do? You're like, what is she going to do? She doesn't love this man and he doesn't love her. And how are you loving these children when you don't love each other? You don't love yourselves. I don't know. But
yeah.
But we know, and stock market crash is coming. And then what are you going to do with your cathedral? What?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a short read. It's well written. I was so bummed out reading that book. I was so bummed.
Yeah.
That I just, it left me just feeling very hopeless
for a Christmas
for the
book.
Angel. You know, you're feeling sorry for the angel. Like, what?
He's doing his best,
his very level angel best. You feel bad for the kids. You know, the daughter's not getting some great lessons there. I mean, it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the feel-good hit of the holiday season, that's for sure.
So let's transition into the movie, and we'll play the trailer right now, which is kind of an anti-trailer. It's sort of offbeat, this trailer, but I think it's fun.
Hollywood, California, and the studios where the distinguished pictures that bear the name of Samuel Goldwyn are produced. Such films as The Best Years of Our Lives, winner of 9 Academy Awards. It was in these very studios that we recently tried to make a trailer for a new and wonderful picture called The Bishop's Wife. You know what a trailer is. One of those little films you see at your theater which shows you scenes from some big picture that's coming soon. Well, we made the big picture, and it's on its way. But something happened to the little one. It was on the day we finished all work on The Bishop's Wife. The stars were on their way home.
Yes, well, goodbye, kid.
Yes, great son, Loretta.
Goodbye, Carrie. It's wonderful working bye-bye. With you. Goodbye, goodbye, David.
See you very soon.
Very soon, I hope.
Goodbye, David. Carrie.
See you tonight.
Oh, that's right. Tonight.
What about the trailer?
Trailer?
Oh, I forgot all about it.
Well, they must be set up somewhere. Where are they?
Say 6.
No, I think they're on 8, David.
8? Oh, yes, come on, come on. Just a minute, folks. I'm sorry. Can't go in without a pass.
Oh, well, you see, we work here. That is, we just finished over there, now we...
All right, so you're finished. There's no one stopping you from leaving.
But you don't understand. We still have to make the trailer.
Well, I'm sure you wouldn't want to stop us from telling people about a great picture like The Bishop's Wife.
Have you seen it?
Well, no, not exactly, but...
Then how do you know it's great?
Well, we had a lot of fun making it, and that's always a very good sign.
Well, maybe so, but I'm new here. I don't know you folks, unless you got a pass.
I'm David Niven, and I play the bishop.
And I'm Loretta Young, and I play the bishop's wife.
And I'm Cary Grant. I play...
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah, wait a minute. What's the matter?
Nobody's supposed to know what part I play until they see the picture.
Then what do you need of the trailer?
Well, we'd like folks to come in and see the picture. It's very fine. And it's quite the most unusual picture Sam Goldwyn has ever made.
Oh, yeah, it's full of surprises.
Oh, please.
Well, if you put it that way.
Thanks, officer.
I've got an idea.
What?
The bishop's wife is different. Let's keep it that way. Let's have no trailer.
Oh, David, a picture without a trailer?
No, that's it. Why take all the wonderful surprises out of it before people see it?
All right, so, no trailer.
No trailer.
Wait a minute.
Goodbye.
Hold on.
This movie was produced by Samuel Goldwyn. At first, they had a whole other director and a whole other cast, and it wasn't working out. And he brought in Cary Grant, he brought in David Niven, and he brought in Loretta Young. He had to change like his main players. And Cary Grant would only do it if he could play the angel, and because he was a big star.
Good choice.
And I think it's great choice.
He's perfect.
Yes.
I mean, the reason the movie is a delight. Let's just
yes,
right off the
it's
bat.
A like, really it's, great holiday film.
Oh, if you want to cheer yourself up after reading The Bishop's Wife, watch The Bishop's Wife.
Funnily enough.
This is true. You know, we've had this conversation, especially for those of you who are new, you might don't know that we have quite a long and growing list of I'm just, again, spoiler alert. I think we're going to agree that the movie is better than the book.
Yes.
This time. This is another one for that list. Just because a book isn't awesome or isn't like a riveting piece of entertainment doesn't mean that there's not a nugget of a story there that can make a great movie, as we've seen time and time again, like The Graduate and, of course, Jaws. Mm-hmm. I think this is another one of those scenarios where you have the bare bones of the story, where you have a bishop obsessed with building this cathedral and an angel comes to help him. And he really actually helps the wife kind of a little bit more. Mm-hmm. In the book, the bishop is unhelpable. but then the other thing is they're looking at it now from they're setting it in 1947. So it's not only post the crash and post the depression, it's post World War II. Mm-hmm. There's still like a period of austerity, but America is kind of, their version of Build Back Better, they're kind of getting back on their feet. Unlike in the book, David Niven's bishop is kind of consumed. He's a little bit drunk with power and he's consumed with building this cathedral. But the people who really know him and know his work are like, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Which is not a thing that happens in the book at all. Everybody's like, oh, we've got to help him build this cathedral. What makes this work so well, apart from the fact that I think setting it in the contemporary time of 1947, I think was a great move. I also think the cast, what a phenomenal cast this thing has. Wow. I mean, and we talked about this, same as It's a Wonderful Life. You know, what makes that movie work the way, another Angel movie, what makes that movie work so well is the stellar cast that they put mm-hmm. together, not just the main characters, but all of the, we have the kind of similar situation where you've got all of these tertiary, figures that move in and out of the story played by these absolutely A-list character actors.
Elsa Lancaster is in here. She plays Matilda, the maid.
She's Katie Nana.
She's so funny.
And Bride of Frankenstein. I love her so much in this role in The Bishop's Wife. Oh, it's just, she's adorable.
She's so cute. She's so adorable. The house is great. They have this huge brownstone.
Oh, the house is really fantastic.
It's really amazing. And then they have the boy that plays young George Bailey. He is a kind of a kid on an ice rink.
Of all things.
The little girl that played Zuzu is the daughter in this story, Zuzu's Petals.
Yeah, who's called Debbie for some
Debbie
reason.
Debbie for
she's
some
called
reason.
Debbie. We don't know why. But unclear. I mean, again, she, if you've seen It's a Wonderful Life, you know how adorable this little girl is.
Yeah.
Is there anybody cuter in 1947?
No.
I guess not. Because she's sweeping all the cute roles and I can see why.
Yeah. Cary Grant comes in and he immediately discusses with David Niven, I'm your angel. I'm here to help you out. I'm Cary Grant. I'm going to be charming. And
he's like, right.
Okay. And he does. They get into a little snowball fight with the kids and he gets Debbie to get her confidence.
Hey, fellas. Who's the head man around here? What's the idea of this game you're playing?
This isn't a game. This is a battle.
We attack the fort and they try to defend it. See?
Oh, yeah, I see. Well, this young lady would like to get into it.
Who, her?
She can't fight. Her father's a bishop.
But what difference does it make what her father is? And you, High Hat? How'd you like her to play on your team?
She couldn't throw a snowball as far as I could spit.
Oh, couldn't she? Come on, Debbie. You show them what you can do.
It's true. I can't throw.
Nonsense. Of course you can. Now, here. You pack it tight, put it in that hand, draw the arm back, aim it right at him, and let it go.
Hey!
Beautiful. A bullseye.
She pitched a curve. Did you see that?
Come on, kid. You're in our army. He's broken their morale. Come on!
Think she'll get hurt?
Probably, but she'll love it. May I?
Surely.
She takes Julia out for lunch at Michelle's, which was like their place. And then the other ladies in the corner are gossiping about them. And he just brings them over to the table and talks to them. And he's basically helping sell the idea of this castle that he's building to himself. I mean, the bishop. You get the idea he's attracted to her because it's Loretta Young. And my goodness, how beautiful is she?
Can you take your eyes off her for
a
second? No.
Pretty tough. She's wearing a horrible hat. It's at one point.
What is with that hat? It is so hideous.
It's hideous.
It is such an awful hat.
But that's her Christmas
hat.
Was
that really? How was that the fashion? What are we missing about the hat that everybody is losing their mind about this hideous hat? Anyway. And there's this scene. Yeah. There's this scene in the beginning when the angel first shows up. He establishes, first of all, again, it's Cary Grant.
Right.
It's Cary Grant. He's 43. He's at his most Cary Grantist. Yeah. And, you know, he shows up. He's the suave angel with the transatlantic accent. And he saves a blind man from getting hit by cars. And then there's this woman. There's a woman. She's got a pram with a baby in it and a toddler in her that she's holding. And the toddler's like, and it's Christmas time. And the toddler's like, mommy, mommy, I want to see the shop window. And the mom's like, okay. And so she leaves the pram on the crowded New York sidewalk
walks about,
I don't know, 20 feet to take her daughter to see the shop window. And as she's doing that, the pram starts rolling into traffic. And it's right before it's going to go into the intersection. Cary Grant, the angel, like swoops in and stops the pram. And what would crack me up is, so she's holding the toddler and she turns around and she goes, my baby, drops the toddler, abandons the toddler on the crowded New York sidewalk to run after the baby. And she's like, oh, my baby, you saved my baby. I'm like, you had another kid, lady. Where's that kid? Because I don't see her anywhere. She seems to be gone now. Good job, mom. So he establishes that he's an angel. You see right away, like, it's not quite like flash and mirrors and smoke and, you know, magic that way. It's this little kind of human magic that he does. And he charms people. He does kind of little Jedi mind trick kind of stuff on people.
He knows their names.
He knows everybody's first name. Everybody's first name. You get to look at Cary Grant and Loretta Young a lot, which is great. And I think David Niven as the bishop, he's wonderful. Yeah. Like you see his, another thing that's really great about the movie that's not in the book at all is we get this little bit of backstory that the bishop and his wife used to run this parish in a very kind of underserved community, and he was really beloved, and he's very young to be a bishop, but this rich lady kind of took a shine to him and basically got him the job. And so now she feels like he's sort of beholden to her, and he kind of needs to do what she says. And but I like that there's this backstory of and they love each other as the other thing. Mm-hmm. Is we also establish right away that the bishop and his wife actually love each other. The bishop is a little misguided. He wants to do this cathedral thing. He's got this rich lady like, you got to build my cathedral and name it after my dead husband. And he's like, oh, yeah, I better do that.
Constantly on the phone.
Really, yeah, really, though, at heart, he does really love his wife.
Yes.
It's not a loveless marriage. They did have something. And also, he also understands, again, it's post-Depression era now. He also understands the importance of that he should really be working to help better people's lives. So he's not completely dissociated from that concept like the bishop in the book is.
Right.
So I really, really love that you see the old parish. These anytime we go back to his old parish in the kind of rundown part of town, I love all of those scenes. There's several of them like that.
There's also several scenes of Cary Grant and Loretta Young just kind of hanging around New York, and they're in a cab with a guy named Sylvester.
I could watch all day, by the way.
Them ice skating. I posted in Instagram. I was like, can we just have a movie of them ice skating?
I was captivated.
Yes.
I was just like, my chin on both fists, just like, can we just live here for a while? This is so nice.
He takes her ice skating, and all of a sudden they're both really good at ice skating, and Sylvester's really good at ice skating, and everybody he comes in touch with, he can kind of make a little magic happen. There's a scene where he can bring all the lights on the Christmas tree together. He bonds with little Debbie. He warms up to the people, helps those people warm up to David Niven about his idea. So he's doing all the things that he can do. And it does culminate where there is a boys' choir. They're singing, and actually, it's beautiful.
It's been a long time since Henry's been down here. I wish he had come. You know, when he was here, he was so close to people, so loved by everybody.
Uh-huh. And how does it seem to you now? That in dreaming of his cathedral, he's moved away from the people he loved?
Yes. It's going to be such a disappointment for Reverend Miller not to see him.
Oh, well, he doesn't have to be disappointed.
Hello, Mr. Miller.
Oh, Mrs. Brougham, so good of you to come.
Oh, not at all. I'm delighted to be here. This is Mr. Dudley, the bishop's new assistant.
Mr. Dudley, a pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
The bishop will try to get here later, Mr. Miller. Something important came up.
Oh, of course, he's a busy man now.
Yes.
This is Mrs. Duffy.
I know, Mrs. Duffy. How are you?
It's always an honor to have you here at St. Timothy's.
Oh, thank you. And this is Mr. Dudley. Mrs. Duffy is the organist.
Oh, I'm sure Mrs. Duffy plays enchantingly. Come, Mrs. Duffy.
I'm afraid some of our boys are a little late. We really should begin, but I don't see how we can. It's really quite embarrassing. But you know, it is a little difficult to compete with basketball and Christmas. They're all good boys at heart.
I know they are. They'll show up.
I hope so.
Hello, Bobby.
Hello.
What do you sing?
I sing first soprano.
Oh, you good?
I don't know.
Well, how about giving out?
Me alone?
Well, you got George up there. Hello, George.
Hello.
Well, what do you say?
Okay.
Are you ready, Mrs. Duffy?
Oh, yes.
Hit it.
I had forgotten about that scene altogether. I was like, oh, yeah, they go and the boys are singing. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I know.
It's so moving. And I mean, again, I have a hard time believing that, like, that whatever it was, like a dozen boys make this like huge Mormon tabernacle choir sound. But it's absolutely gorgeous. The whole score of the movie is really, really well done. I think they do a lot with sound and music. Like special effects, you know, the angel magic is very sparingly used.
It's like he waits a beat and then the thing
just
happens.
Little touches.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I think it's really well done. Like they could have really hit you over the head with that, but they kind of sneak up on you, like with like the boys' choir. Like it starts out where it's just a couple of boys and more keep showing up. And it is so moving.
Yes.
It's really beautiful. And you know, the other thing that I kept going back and looking again, is the gate to the old church.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I've never seen such a thing, but it never occurred to me, like, of course they would have something like that. So it's an old wrought iron gate. It's probably 19th century or meant to be 19th century. And it has open gas lights built into. So it's this like flaming arc leading people into the, I mean, I've never seen anything like that in my life.
I'm sure they blew up. I'm sure
beautiful.
There's a, I know.
I'm sure it was very dangerous.
Yes.
But I mean, especially like when people, you imagine like women with the big feathers in their hats and stuff. I'm sure lots of things went wrong with that.
Yeah.
I totally get why we don't have that anymore. But anyway, in this movie, it's really beautiful.
It's a black and white film too.
It's gorgeous.
But Dudley and Julia, they kind of have a sense of like, they do kind of have a moment where you wonder if they're going to get together. Because it's Cary Grant. But, I mean, that'd be tough.
Because it's, I mean, right?
Yeah, I'll go to heaven with
seriously.
Him.
Seriously. Yeah.
Dudley. What are you doing out here?
I'm just admiring the scenery.
But aren't you supposed to be working?
I always take a walk before lunch. Good idea, relaxing, you know?
Oh, I wish you could persuade Henry to do that.
I'll try. Oh, by the way, I told Miss Cassaway to go home, and I told Delia not to bother to bring me anything on the tray.
Well, what will you do about lunch?
I thought I'd go to Michelle's. Ever heard of it?
Michelle's. Oh, it's a lovely place. We used to go there. That was years ago.
Well, how about you and I going there today?
You and... to Michelle... Oh, no, I couldn't.
Why not? Well, surely you don't think Henry would mind. Oh, I'd explain to him that we just...
Oh, no, it isn't that, but... Well, you see, Matilda's off Christmas shopping, and so I have to look after Debbie.
But here's Matilda now.
If you wish... Hello.
Hello.
If you wish, I'll take Debbie home, Mrs. Braun.
But, Matilda, you're shopping it.
Oh, I finished it. I finished it so quick. It was just like a miracle.
Mommy! We won!
Oh, Debbie, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
We won! I'm hanging up the medal!
Oh, put up your hood, dear.
David who?
Yeah, sorry. Exactly. Henry what?
but what I really love about the movie is they play that moment. Again, in the book, it's like, it is a tragedy because she loves an angel and an angel loves her. And that's never going to work.
No.
But in the movie, yeah, it's like this moment, but what it is actually he's testing. The angel always knows better. He's testing Julia's love for her husband and also her husband, making the husband see, look at what you're, this is what's going to happen if you keep, you know, your head up in this cathedral, David Niven. And so they both come to their senses. And so it's all like an angelic test.
Right.
As opposed to a profound tragedy like it is in the book.
Yeah, and Henry does become jealous of their attraction towards, because everybody could sense it. I mean, you know, it's not, they're not exactly, they're not hiding it. I mean, it just seems pretty obvious.
I mean, you know, people assume they're a couple when they're walking around. Yeah,
they look great together.
They play that up for sure.
Yeah.
They look amazing together.
I mean, these are movie stars we're talking about. Come on.
Seriously.
Yeah. Anyway, in the long run, he realizes that it's not a great idea for this cathedral. There's just other things he could be doing with his life. Also, he should probably stay with his wife because she loves him. He loves her. That's, you know.
I'm sorry. You're married to Loretta Young.
I mean, anybody more beautiful?
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
And
the Professor Weatheridge is the one who kind of slaps him across the face, you know, in a verbal way. It just kind of said, look, dude, you have a great, like, go back to your wife, go back to your life. And so Dudley realizes that he's accomplished his mission because, no, he didn't get the cathedral, but he's got so much more going for him now. And Dudley helps him write. That's another magic trick. He helps him write the sermon.
Oh, yeah, the sermon. Which is touching, and I mean, come on.
It's just, and it's Christmas Eve, and it's, I guess it's like midnight mass.
Tonight I want to tell you the story of an empty stocking. Once upon a midnight clear, there was a child's cry. A blazing star hung over a stable, and wise men came with birthday gifts. We haven't forgotten that night down the centuries. We celebrated with stars on Christmas trees, with the sound of bells, and with gifts. But especially with gifts. You give me a book, I give you a tie. Aunt Martha has always wanted an orange squeezer. And Uncle Henry could do with a new pipe. We forget nobody, adult or child. All the stockings are filled. All that is, except one. And we have even forgotten to hang it up. A stocking for the child born in a manger. It's his birthday we're celebrating. Don't let us ever forget that. Let us ask ourselves what he would wish for most. And then let each put in his share. Loving kindness, warm hearts, and the stretched out hand of tolerance. All the shining gifts that make peace on earth.
You know who else I love? The bishop's secretary.
Mildred? Yeah. Mildred Castaway. Yeah. Yeah.
She's
the characters.
All the performances are so good.
So good.
So good.
Yeah. Elsa Lancaster is hilarious. And I do love Sylvester the taxi driver when he, you know, goes out on the ice with them. I mean, there's
he's
just
so
some great.
Funny.
He's wonderful. And in the end, he's playing the midnight mass and he's got like this mass full of wonderful people. He's happy.
In the
it's
old
Christmas.
Church.
In the old church.
He's in the old church with the scary, dangerous gate. It's again, it's a great antidote to the book.
Yes.
It's uplifting. It's beautiful. It gives you hope. It makes you appreciate your life. It's funny. So many wonderful things in this movie. I'm so glad that we watched it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And it's something, I don't know if kids would really enjoy it that much. It's a little bit,
I think it would be a little slow.
A little slow for kids. But yes, I could watch Loretta Young and Cary Grant ice skate for like 6 hours.
If you're looking for a movie like when you're trimming the tree,
yeah,
it's perfect for that. It is. Yep. It's perfect because it'll just get you in the mood. It's just wonderful. Yep. It does really well. It's a big hit. And basically what happens in it's 1996 is the other adaptation.
Yes.
And that's with
again, I mean, let's just talk about big shoes to fill, right? We've got Cary Grant. We've got Loretta Young. Who else are you going to get but Denzel Washington and Whitney Houston?
And they're
great together.
I love Whitney Houston. She's so sad in the movie. She's always so...
Well, again, and this was the kind of thing I liked about that version is, which they didn't touch really on in the 40s one at all, and certainly not in the book. Like Whitney Houston in the bishop's wife, or no, the preacher's wife it's called. Mm-hmm. She actually has, again, she has a passion for something. She's a woman with a mind and a point of view, and you know, she's a three-dimensional person. Yeah, so she's sad because you know she's not living her life.
Mm-hmm. And Courtney B. Vance is her husband. And Denzel Washington.
Great choice.
He's great. Well, he's always. Yeah. And I think Penny Marshall directs this movie.
I think so. And Loretta Devine, Jennifer Lewis.
Supporting characters. I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's totally a fine version. It's like you said, it was better than I remembered. I don't think it's as memorable as the 1947 version.
No. But I think it's also like, again, like while you're decorating,
yeah.
You know, it's. And of course, the music is great.
Yeah.
And I really like their chemistry together, Whitney and Denzel. I think it's fun. It's fun. I like it. But you're right. She's a little sad, but I also like that she's more of like a whole person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, is it as memorable? No, come on.
Yeah.
Cary Grant.
I mean,
it's great.
He's in a movie with Katharine Hepburn called Holiday, and it's 1939, and it's on Criterion Channel. And he was an acrobat when he was younger. There's a scene.
Even in this, like the physical stuff that he does.
Well, he can do.
He's 43.
I'm saying, I think he's funnier than Jim Carrey. I will say that. I think Cary Grant is super funny. He could do a double take.
Yeah. All his little double takes and his little like slow burn reactions to things. He's so funny.
Yeah. He's special. He was one of the special ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I just loved it. And I think it works, again, it works so well because you have these, this triad of the two, we're going on and on about the two of them, but also David Niven. Mm-hmm. I think really, I really liked his performance so much because you really see the struggle that he's going through, you know, between what he thinks he should be doing and what he really knows he should be doing. You really see that conflict and like that whole funny bit with him in the chair, mm-hmm. and the patroness. He's really, really good. And I think he's just the perfect counterbalance. You know, the whole thing is just so well balanced. It's a delight.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a movie.
Yeah, so movie. Down. Movie. 1947 movie. And it's streaming on Amazon right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So what are we doing next?
Well, we had a couple of ideas. There's Christmas in Canaan? Babes in Toyland. Year Without
Is Babes
a
in Toyland Laurel and Hardy?
Okay, so Babes in Toyland, 1961. It's fantasy, Annette Funicello.
Really?
Yeah. It's the March of the Wooden Soldiers, excuse me.
Uh-huh.
And then let me see.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, there's Frozen we could do. We have Year Without a Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
Okay, well, let's do that. Okay. So we will, let me look this up.
I'm intrigued by this Annette Funicello thing, though.
I know. It's a ballet. Yes, The Year Without a Santa Claus. Yay!
Dun, 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 dun,
dun. It's like 42 pages.
All right.
That's right up our alley. Okay.
I might actually get my tree trimmed this week.
Thank you, everyone, so much for listening to the show today. I'd love to thank Kensington Books for sponsoring this particular episode. Please be sure to follow us on all the things social media. Once again, if you have any ideas, please send them our way. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, and my site is brooklynfitchick.com. And we will be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags LadyPodSquad and PotterFamily. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to Patreon, and look for Book vs. Movie podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. You can follow Margo D. at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media, and Margo P. at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.
Yeah.